great pleasure now to invite Len Robert Smith to address us.
Thank you very much, Mary. In the presence of such a distinguished group of interpreting and translating professionals, both academics and practitioners, it would, I think, be presumptuous in the extreme for me to talk about what the process involves or what the complexities and demands of interpreting and translation are. Nor would the 20 minutes available to me be sufficient for me to attempt to describe in any detailed way the history of interpreting and translating developments in Australia. What I propose to do, therefore, is to speak from my viewpoint as a lawyer and more recently as a judge who has had some involvement with and experience of working with interpreters and translators, and about how they intersect with the justice system, with particular reference to Western Australia. In a paper entitled Current Situation in Legal Interpreting in Australia, prepared by the Legal Services Division of the Victorian Ethnic Affairs Commission, it was said, and I quote, "Many years after the official recognition of the language needs of non-English speaking people in Australia and various reform proposals, Australia's language service provision is characterised by limited resources, a lack of uniformity of approach, and scant appreciation by many of the complexities involved in the interpretation process," unquote. That paper was presented at an Interpreters and the Law conference in Sydney, Australia, in July 1988. It is an unfortunate fact that although much has been done since then, the language service situation in Australia is still marked by those same characteristics. In what follows, I will largely use the term interpreter, but that, of course, is not to minimise in any way the importance of the role of the translator, whose work is of equal importance. It is just that in a legal context, most of the observations I will be making arise more in relation to the work of the interpreter. The principles, of course, apply to both. The legal background can be very lightly sketched. Generally speaking, international law does recognise a right to an interpreter. That may be either necessarily implied in an international instrument, or it may be expressly stated. An example of the former is the 1991 Convention on the Rights of the Child, which provides in Article 9.2 that in proceedings which may result in the separation of a child from his or her family, all interested parties are to be given an opportunity to participate in the proceedings and make their views known, and in Article 12.2 that the child is to be given an opportunity to be heard in any judicial or administrative proceedings affecting him or her. The exercise of the right of a person to participate in proceedings and make their views known arguably necessarily implies a right to an interpreter if the person would not otherwise be able to do that. By contrast, the 1966 International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights says in Article 14 that in the determination of any criminal charge against him, everyone shall be entitled to the following minimum guarantees in full equality: to be informed promptly and in detail in the language which he understands of the nature and cause of the charge against him; to have the free assistance of an interpreter if he cannot understand or speak the language used in court. The problem is, the obligations imposed by such international instruments are not necessarily reflected in federal or state law in Australia. That is because, constitutionally, international treaties and conventions are not part of Australian domestic law unless the obligations in them are expressly adopted by federal or state parliaments as federal or state law respectively. The common law, that is the English common law which we use in Australia, has never recognised there is a right to an interpreter. Whether or not a person should have one has always been left to the discretion of the judge, magistrate or tribunal. In 1995, the Commonwealth included in the Evidence Act, which came into operation that year, an express right to an interpreter. Section 30 of that Act says, and I quote, A witness may give evidence about a fact through an interpreter, unless the witness can understand and speak the English language sufficiently to enable the witness to understand and to make adequate reply to questions that may be put about the fact." Unquote. This still leaves to the court the task of assessing whether the witness does have sufficient English to enable them to understand and make an adequate reply to questions. Although the way the section is framed, such a witness would be entitled to an interpreter as of right, unless it could be shown that they could speak or understand English sufficiently to give adequate replies. That provision applies in both civil and criminal cases, but the statute applies only to proceedings in federal courts. Section 30 of the Commonwealth Evidence Act clearly applies to an accused person as a witness, but interestingly, it does not give an accused person a right to have the proceedings interpreted to him or her at trial. A failure to do so in circumstances in which the accused could not sufficiently understand the proceedings would, however, be likely to lead to the quashing of any conviction as resulting from an inherently unfair and fundamentally flawed trial. Some other Commonwealth statutes do give a suspect or a person charged with a criminal offence a right to have an interpreter when being interviewed by the police or an investigating agency. Some Australian states do have legislation which gives a right to an interpreter in criminal cases only. Some other states recognise such a right in both criminal and civil proceedings. In Western Australia, there is no statutory right to an interpreter in either criminal or civil proceedings. Whether or not an interpreter is required is still left to the discretion of the court, which, if there is a dispute about whether the accused or witness does not have sufficient understanding of English, must make its own assessment of that. I have to say that in my experience, in criminal cases in this state, there is rarely any difficulty. If a party's lawyer informs the court an interpreter is required, that will ordinarily be arranged without further contest. This may, to some extent, be a product of the fact that Western Australia is possibly the most ethnically diverse state in Australia, and most courts at all levels have had an increasing number of cases which involve non-English speaking parties, witnesses, defendants, or accused persons, and which have given them some experience of working with interpreters. That applies also to Aboriginal people, in respect of whom there has been very much a growing recognition by the courts and some lawyers of the potential for injustice flowing from a lack of awareness of language and cultural issues. Significant education and training of interpreters in Aboriginal languages has been undertaken in Western Australia in recent years, and there are presently accredited interpreters at NATI paraprofessional level in at least 12 Aboriginal languages in areas which include the Kimberley, the Pilbara, the Goldfields and Western Desert regions of Western Australia. The fact that traditionally these were not written languages and the vast cultural differences, which often include that there are no conceptual equivalents, pose substantial and unique challenges, particularly in a legal environment. I should very briefly sketch a little more factual background with particular reference to Western Australia. As was the situation throughout Australia, in the 1950s, there were no government language services in Western Australia. The interpreting and translating needs of those migrants who had come to this country after the Second World War were met, although that is obviously not an accurate description, by bilingual or multilingual family and friends, whose own English was often rudimentary at best. The 1960s saw increasing reliance on government employees or workers, including cleaners and other manual workers, to interpret or translate for people with whom their departments or agencies were dealing. This progressed into the 1970s and early 1980s. Public service jobs were advertised as carrying additional pay or allowances for people who could speak another language, in the expectation they would do so as incidental to their employment. In the meantime, the Translating and Interpreting Service, TIS, was established by the Commonwealth within the Department of Immigration and Ethnic Affairs. This was intended to be a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week service for all language groups across Australia in health, welfare, law and other areas of government responsibility. Over the years since, most state governments have established their own language services. These are supplemented by commercial language service providers and provided almost invariably by small businesses or individuals. The Western Australian state government has never established an interpreting translating service, despite a recommendation made in a 1984 report, Interpreting and Translating in WA State Government Services, that it should do so. The only government language service operating in Western Australia is TIS. There is no comprehensive, overarching legal recognition of interpreting and translating as a profession at either a federal or state level. Professional standards are set and accreditation is given by the National Authority for the Accreditation of Translators and Interpreters, NATI. But that has no regulatory role, nor does it have a mandate to establish binding rules of professional ethics or conduct. Although one of its objects, when it was established in 1977, was to foster a self-regulating professional body within 5 years, that has not happened. OSSET may ultimately become that body, but that will only happen if, as an organisation, it has the capacity and commitment to fully recognise and advance equally the interests of all translators and interpreters, governmental and private, in each state and territory of Australia. Against that background, I come to some observations of practical experience in Western Australia. The threshold issue, I think, remains recognition of the need for an interpreter in a particular situation. Despite our multicultural society, it is still true that the vast majority of people in positions of authority within the legal system are monocultural and monolingual. There is often simply no appreciation that a person who has some capacity in English may nonetheless be at a significant linguistic and cultural disadvantage. Even where the need for an interpreter is recognised, expectations and understanding of their role are often lacking, or at best confused. I was told recently of a senior lawyer in a firm of private practitioners who handed the interpreter a complicated legal document and asked him to take the lawyer's clients into the next room and explain it to them. Anecdotal information suggests interpreters are sometimes still asked by lawyers to comment on the reliability of clients or witnesses, or to make some other personal observation about them. It is becoming less frequent to hear court interpreters told to not have a conversation with the witness, to just interpret what he or she says, but it still does happen. My own observations are that many lawyers are now working much better and more effectively with interpreters in the courtroom, although those who do not still display a fundamental level of ignorance. The most common failings are speaking to the interpreter rather than the witness, using indirect rather than direct speech, and using idiomatic or even idiosyncratic language, which probably cannot be interpreted in any meaningful way. Some judges and more lawyers are still reluctant to involve interpreters. To some extent, that is a result of the inadequate understanding on their part, which I have just mentioned. Often, however, it is the product of unfortunate experience. The requirement is, of course, for competent interpreters. Whilst the bulk of legal interpreting work is done in lawyers' offices, police interviews and in administrative agencies or tribunals, Interpreting is particularly, court interpreting is particularly demanding. There are still too many instances in which the quality of the interpretation is less than satisfactory. There are various possible reasons for this. Not all interpreters provided for court interpreting are accredited. The national competition policy has been thought to mean there could be no legal requirement that only accredited interpreters or translators could do forensic work. But there is an argument that there is no reason why such a requirement would be anti-competitive, provided the competency standards were reasonable and appropriate, and there was no restriction on who could apply to meet them. That, however, may be an argument for another day. The minimum level for legal interpreting is NATI Level 3. A major difficulty with NATI accreditation is that it is a one-off qualification. There is no requirement nor process for continuing education nor for requalification. As Laster and Taylor observe in the book Interpreters and the Legal System, interpreters in Australia are still not perceived to be competent and ethical professionals. There is, in my view, much merit in their argument that is a result of inadequacies which are largely the result of systemic problems, such as a lack of uniform education and testing and a failure to develop proper methods for service delivery. I shall return to this in a moment. I now want to come to the most recent developments in the field so far as they concern Western Australia. TIS, which, as I have said, is the only language service in the government sector in this state, ceased its commercial translating service approximately 3 years ago. All translating, other than a very limited service for migrant settlement documents, was left to the commercial market. About 18 months to 2 years ago, TIS services were consolidated so as to be provided from three centres, Perth, Sydney and Melbourne. The interpreting and translating professionals providing the service were located in the source centres. Perth had responsibility for Western Australia and most of the Northern Territory and South Australia. The language service needs of the rest of Australia were met from Sydney and Melbourne. However, early this year, TIS consolidated to Melbourne, which resulted in the closure of its Perth office. By the end of March 2002, the service had been transferred. TIS subsequently announced it was tendering out its settlement-related translating services to a commercial provider. The selected provider operates from Melbourne. Likewise, TIS interpreting for Western Australia is now done through Melbourne. Although there is still considerable work for Level 3 interpreters because of the requirement for them to attend personally, particularly in court, anecdotal evidence suggests most other interpreters in Western Australia lost up to 90% of their work from this change. While there may be purely economic benefits from this rationalisation from the point of view of the Commonwealth Government, it has exacerbated the financial pressure on practising interpreters and translators in Western Australia, who were already operating in an extremely competitive and very fragmented market. There are also quality problems arising out of, for example, the lack of familiarity of interstate interpreters with Western Australian geography, place names, suburbs and institutions. One further consequence is that government health service providers, in particular, who require interpreters or translators, are being driven to contract their own. I understand Royal Perth Hospital has some 90 interpreters engaged as contractors, and other hospitals are heading in the same direction. For example, Princess Margaret and King Edward hospitals have a considerable number of contracted interpreters. Fremantle has employed a small number of interpreters in the main languages required in the hospital, and Sir Charles Gairdner Hospital has a list of freelance interpreters who are called upon on a demand basis. TIS itself, Centrelink and the Criminal Investigation Service of the Western Australian Police Service likewise have panels of contracted interpreters. In the main, these contracted interpreters are individuals. The emphasis is on self-employed interpreters doing contract work. Because of the competitive pressures, pay rates are minimal, benefits are few, they are unable to afford either the time or money for continuing training, and there is no professional requirement nor obligation upon them to do so in any event. The profession is fragmented. This practical experience validates the view of Laster and Taylor that the fact the service itself is undervalued, the structure of private sector interpreting is diffuse, and the low levels of pay all militate improvement in quality of the service, which in turn fosters the perception of inadequacy and dissatisfaction with it. As they point out, there is an enormous variation in the quality of legal interpreting. My own observations lead me to agree with their view that this is due, in substantial part at least, to low status, low levels of pay, poor working conditions and lack of professional development opportunities. The strength in diversity, of which the theme of this conference speaks, I would see as the strength to be gained from the organised combination of those interpreters and translators working in diverse languages and cultures. an organised combination which is recognised as a profession of separate and equal standing with other professions. That recognition coming from an appreciation by those dealing or working with interpreters and translators that they demonstrate professional competence, consistently high standards, a system of ethics, and at least self-regulation as a profession. The spectre with which I suggest confrontation can no longer be avoided is that of professional relevance. If diversity in practice means no more than interpreters and translators in Australia continuing to be recognised, to be trained, and to work in the fragmented and essentially unregulated way, which has essentially been the case to the present, competency standards will never reach their optimum, and recognition as an Australian profession will never come. This conference presents an important opportunity for interpreters and translators, academic and practicing, national and international, to generate a forceful impetus to move translators and interpreters in Australia towards the achievement of status as a national profession. Common interest urges it. The community and national interests demand it. Thank you.
For those of you here with long memories, and there are some with long memories, you will recall that TIS began as ETIS.